Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, January 24th, a beautiful day in Southern California. But then again, every day is a beautiful day in Southern California. Today, I'm joined by for the ride by Danny. Welcome to the show, Danny.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for joining me. A beautiful day to start off, right?
Absolutely. It's gorgeous outside. So there you go.
I'm like thinking, okay, what are we going to wear today? And then I'm realizing the same as yesterday and the day before.
Exactly. It's almost how cold is it in the actual office? Because you can't really judge it by outside because it's always warm outside.
Right. Exactly. You go in the sun, it's hot. You go in the shade, it's cold. Look what we complain about in LA, right?
We live a tough life. That's for sure.
Yeah, no snow, no rain. I wouldn't mind some rain myself, but you know,
it's not up to us. I grew up in Portland, so I've had my fair share of rain. Rained out at this point. I've lived places where there's snow. You know what? Give me the sunshine all year round. I'm okay with
You'll take it, huh?
I will take it.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You know, talking about Oregon, which is interesting, I was reading yesterday that if you want the safest place in the country from natural disasters, Oregon is a place to be.
Really?
Yeah. No earthquakes, no tornadoes, no hurricanes, no floods, none of that stuff.
Matter of fact, growing up, those were never concerns of mine. Right. And actually, I lived in the South, and I remember my first tornado warning, and I remember calling my mom, and she was like, I don't even know what to tell you to do. I've never had to sit through something like that.
Yeah.
It's a very panicking situation. So it's a good thing that Oregon doesn't have those concerns.
Yeah. I know. I have like fantasies about Oregon when I see pictures and stuff. And it's funny because one of the places I'm considering of maybe moving to eventually would be Oregon, you know? Because it's beautiful, right?
It's gorgeous. Because the best part is you can go an hour and you're at the beach. You can go an hour and you're at the mountains. Or you can go an hour and you're hiking somewhere beautiful. So, you know, you've got the snow, you've got water, whatever your heart desires is only really an hour or so away.
Wow. Okay, well, what the hell am I still doing here? I don't know.
It rains. Remember that part. It rains.
Exactly.
Southern California, the sun.
Yeah. But I like the rain, you know, although I would imagine if you have it every day for a long time, it's not fun anymore, right?
It starts to affect your mood a little bit. Right? You know, there's something about waking up to sun every day that you can't really be upset. You've got to smile. So
with rain,
it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I would imagine if it's every day, all day, you know. But here, I mean, every time there's rain, I celebrate. I go out and dance in the rain.
It's a free car wash.
Yeah, exactly.
For everybody in LA.
Dance in the rain. Because it gives some kind of an intimate mood, I think, you know. It's kind of like the darkness closes you in. You have the rain. You hear it on your car, on your roof. And
are you a movie watcher? I always feel like a movie has to go on once it starts raining.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be good, too. I started watching more movies than I used to because I felt I should start catching up on some of the movies because there's a lot of movies I barely go to the theater anymore because it's so...
it's expensive.
It's very expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for 2 hours, you spend, you know, for two people, it's $50, you
Absolutely.
Know, for the tickets and the popcorn.
You have to get popcorn.
Right.
I was just telling somebody the other day, what's the point of going to movies if you don't get popcorn? So you're right. It does add up after a while.
It really does. You know, I mean, I'm so connected to the popcorn. When I watch video at home, I never finish a movie. I only watch as much as until the popcorn runs out.
That's when you buy extra bags so that you can continuously
I do have them, but I don't want to eat so much. So I tell myself, okay, one bag, and that's enough. So I watch movies like in 4 or 5 parts.
In increments. That's funny.
Exactly.
That's great.
So people think I'm crazy, but hey, it works for me, you know?
I understand. Popcorn till the ends.
Yeah. I know. That's cool. So, there's a lot going on in the news. Also, we're going to have a guest calling in about 10 minutes. A superwoman, essentially. She seems to have done everything you could possibly think of in her life. But Danny, let's tell us a little bit about yourself. So you're from Portland, Oregon, right?
Yes.
And do you have siblings?
I do. I have a little sister. She has a lot more patience than I do, seeing as how she's a second grade teacher. Bless her heart. I don't know how she does it. But super proud of her. She's younger than me by 3 years, and she's already... you know, working with students and forming their lives at such a young age, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is, right?
And I'm over here talking for a living.
Yeah,
so.
Well, there you go. Not every you can't put everybody in a box, you know?
Exactly.
And not everybody can be a teacher or a lawyer or whatever, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I grew up on the farm. I grew up on 300 acres in Portland. Really? Just south of Portland. Yeah, my dad's a nurseryman. My mom's a nurse. But I was always into sports, so I was a basketball player. I went actually to the East Coast on a full ride basketball scholarship. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. It was definitely a different childhood than most.
Yeah. Now, what age did you start your basketball?
I started playing probably when I was about 5, just on recreational teams, but really started to pick up where I could tell that maybe this was the path I wanted to take to get my college paid for and things like that, probably roughly around 12 or 13.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty cool, you know. So you got pretty good at it, obviously.
I did. It was a lot of practicing, a lot of hours, and you miss a lot of things. You know, with sports, it's year-round. You know, even though you have the actual season, you still got to get ready for season in the off time. So you miss a lot of birthdays. You miss a lot of weddings and fun family events and things like that. But it was all worth it in the end.
Yeah. Does it affect your schooling, too?
You know, not really. I did a lot of homework on the drive to practice with my family. You know, they were always made sure I was on top of it, because that was something I took a lot of pride in, because I knew that basketball wasn't forever. I needed to, you know, develop some sort of knowledge and some sort of area that I really wanted to pursue, and you have to pay attention to school in order to do that.
That's true, yeah. So are you still into sports and everything?
I am. Yeah? I've sort of just taken off with sports ever since I played in college. You know, I wanted to be in broadcasting, and so because sports was what I knew at the time, I was like, you know, I'm going to go for it in the sports world. Yeah. And that took me to a bunch of different places. I lived in the South, like I said. I lived in Tennessee and worked for the University of Tennessee's athletic department for 2 years. And then the St. Louis Rams hired me to be their reporter, which was crazy because that's how I got to L.A. When the St. Louis Rams moved, they took me with them to be their Los Angeles Rams reporter. And that's what I've been doing the past couple years.
How cool. Now, so you were hired by the Rams? It's not like an independent production company?
No, it's very cool. It's kind of a new form of employment in the sports reporting world, is that you actually work for the team, because the team sort of makes their own content.
I see.
So you are really a liaison between the organization and its fans, the players and the fans. Right. So it was kind of cool because you get firsthand access, unprecedented access to the players because you're around them all the time.
That's true, yeah.
So
it was cool. And they don't have to just rely on the networks or whatever to send a reporter to interview them. They already have
they
one
They have
there.
One in-house, exactly. Wow, so it was interesting, a different way to break news at times, too, because, you know, the old way was, you know, you reach out to the journalists from the local newspapers or the local news stations that usually break the news. But now you have somebody in-house that you might want to have break certain pieces of information. So that
was exactly.
Cool,
and you can have a little bent on, you know, on the story so you look good.
I mean,
the team,
a little bit
the
of
team does.
Definitely
yeah.
a little bit of PR goes before that, for sure.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, they hire you. They want to show themselves in the best light they can, you know.
Absolutely.
Very cool. So you moved, and so where did you go to college?
I went to Stony Brook University. It's in Long Island, New York.
Uh-huh.
Definitely a commuter school, but a lot bigger than what people think. There was about 24,000 people that go there.
Wow.
It's actually more of a medical school. You know, there's a hospital attached. So actually my doctor in Oregon went to Stony Brook.
Really?
So yeah, just a small world. It's definitely a school for, you know, people pursuing a medical degree. However, that was not me. But the journalism department was really good. And it was cool because you could hop on a train on campus, take it into New York City. You were, you know, just a train ride away from that, but yet you didn't have to be in the hustle and bustle of
That's
the city.
True, yeah.
So it was definitely an interesting experience. If anybody has a chance to live out east, if you've been on the West Coast your whole life, it's definitely a little bit of a culture change.
Yeah, huh? So it was for you too. I mean, you're a West Coaster also and stuff. So how many years did you go to school there?
I was there for 4 years.
4 years.
Yes.
And you played basketball for them too?
I did. I played basketball for 4 years and then got a degree in journalism and then also a degree in business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You see, so you know what you were doing.
Yeah.
Now, were your parents making sure you pursue careers and yes, school absolutely. And stuff like
my
that?
My parents are very hands-on. We've always, they're actually my best friends, my parents.
Really?
Yeah, it's how crazy cool how that works out, yeah. You know? But they've always been very involved. I remember my teammates and my friends on campus at Stony Brook in New York used to always say, I see your parents more often than I see my own, and I live an hour away. You know, I've just had a very supportive family.
Wow,
and
they, how lucky you are.
Yeah,
you
they've
know?
Come out to visit me. Even now that I'm in LA, it's been great too, because now it's a much shorter flight. Yeah. It's very, very easy to get down here. So it's been nice. They've always pushed me, always.
Yeah. Well, good. You see, it works. Mm-hmm. It works when you push your kids, and we can't be too soft on them, you know, because then they're like, they need guidance, you know. I mean, when you just go into college and stuff, you need guidance, you know. And unfortunately, some kids don't listen and they don't care about the guidance.
Well, I'm not always going to tell you that I always listened, yeah, you know. Right? I mean, everybody wants to fight back a little bit, and every teenager thinks they know it all. In fact, right. Still standing here at 26 years old, I still think I know it all at times, and they'll be quick to tell me that I don't. So, you know, that's just what a parent yeah. does. You know, they always yeah. have life lessons, and they've been around longer than you. So whether you like it or not, they've got things to say.
Yeah, that's true. Well, tell my kids that. Damn it. They're in their 20s and they still don't think I have something to say.
See? Yeah, yeah. It happens.
Yeah, so you let them, you know. I mean, the thing is that kids come, they grow up with their own personalities and their own stuff, and you just hope to instill some values in them, because they're obviously not going to listen to you a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And everybody's so smart and everything that too smart for their own good, you know, like my son, you know, talks himself out of anything, you know, because he knows so much.
What does he do?
So he's going to college right now in San Francisco, taking biochemistry. He's got only one semester left.
So he's not smart at all.
No, not at all. You know, so when we talk about medication and stuff, he's like, no, there's no proof that works and that works. He starts giving you all the chemistry shit on it. And you go, what the hell are you talking about, man? Okay, you win the argument.
You can win this one, because I don't know science to back it up. That's really funny.
Whoa. So, yeah, you know, and that's how it works. They don't pick up their phones. And, yeah, so hopefully, I mean, with me, it was like my kids were my best friends when they were young, you mm-hmm. know? Now, I guess, you know, somebody was telling me, look, in your 20s, you didn't want to hang out with your parents either, you know?
Right.
But at least you can pick up the phone or something, you know?
I know. It's like, do they call often? Because my friends make fun of me for how often I call my parents,
oh,
which
no.
I thought was normal. Until
you cannot give my left arm for my kids to call me.
Really?
Yeah. They don't
I
even
am
pick up the phone when I call them.
You are not the first person to tell me this. My friends tell me I normally call my parents too much. And I didn't Whoa. Realize it until I got out here and really talk to a lot of people that I know have great relationships with their parents, but they still don't call them as often as I do. Yeah. I don't know.
You're very
it is.
Fortunate to have that, because it shows you have a sense of family, you know. I mean, look, with my parents now, you know, they're old. Well, my dad passed a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
but,
sorry to hear that.
Thank you. But until then, and still with my mom, it's like I'm there every day, you know. And if I can't, I call, you know. But you got to, I mean, look, whether you're religious or not, you have to admit that in the Ten Commandments, they managed to put, you
Are
know,
you
honor.
Catholic?
No,
oh,
not
wow,
at all. I'm Jewish.
Yeah, okay.
That's where the Ten Commandments yeah. came from. But surely enough, it says honor thy parents, you know.
Exactly.
And the thing is because I think it's very important spiritually for a person mm-hmm. and mentally to be close with their family, you know. I mean, your parents do so much for you, you know. So now we have the chance to do, to give them back. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been doing, you know, with my brothers and stuff. So, yeah, I respect family a lot. I mean, there's a lot going on that people miss out on, you know.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And it goes to my extended family as well. The extended, you know, aunts, uncles, things like that. We're all very close. I really did luck out.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
It's like I'm getting distracted because the CNN.com page just refreshed.
Oh, man.
And they put a headline that says, Scientists clone monkeys with Dolly method for the first time. Dolly was that sheep that they cloned some years ago in the UK. But in essence, they put a little like short video, and you have the two cutest monkeys.
They're the cutest little monkeys,
right?
They can come home with me,
right?
They can hang out with me.
I mean, you guys got to see this.
That's normal to have a monkey pet, right?
Right.
If you're
listening live, go to CNN.com, the first page, main page, top story. You'll see those two monkeys. The funniest thing I've ever seen. I got to move this page because I can't focus.
It's very distracting. I totally understand why we got on that topic. They're so cute. Oh, my gosh. I love that. If you are listening, definitely go check that out.
Yeah, right now. Okay, well, here comes our guest right now.
Good.
We haven't had a chance to introduce her yet, but we're going to bring her on right now, and we'll find out everything. We're going to be joined by Rhonda Shear. Rhonda, are you with us?
I am. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I'm speaking from lovely, warm Florida, where it's actually afternoon. And I'm so excited to be coming in next week, though. So
yeah.
Excited.
Oh, cool. You coming in? What do you mean? Like to L.A. or something?
Yes.
Oh.
Los Angeles. I'm coming in to, it's February the 10th, but I'm getting there a little bit earlier just because, you know, I lived there 26 years.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But I'm coming in on the 10th for the Hollywood show, and then on the 11th to sign books at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, wow. So we're going to find out what it is you're going to sign and what kind of a show and everything, because I don't even know where to start. You've done so much, and I'm sure every interviewer has the same dilemma. Where do we start? So, yeah. So you lived in L.A. for how long? 10, 11 years, did you say?
No. 26 years.
Oh, 26 and, years.
Doing lots of television. And I moved there in 1978 and left there in 2003.
Oh.
Was the host of a show called USA Up All Night for many, many years.
Uh-huh.
On USA Network, and hosted movies. And on Gilbert Gottfried hosted on Saturday Night.
Oh,
and
that
so
was
I'm
here in L.A., right? You did that in
that
L.A.
It was out of L.A. initially, and then USA Network moved the show to New York, but it was obviously broadcast on USA Network,
right?
You know, nationwide. So
very cool.
Probably best known for that show.
Yeah.
And Rhonda, hence the name of my book.
Yeah, and the book is Up All Night as well, right? And we'll get to the book in just a moment. Just a little bit background on you. So where are you originally from? Did you grow up in L.A. or did you move here?
I grew up in New Orleans.
Oh,
and
okay.
I was a Southern girl. You know, graduated from Loyola University there, majored in communications.
Uh-huh.
I actually ran for public office in New Orleans before moving to Los Angeles.
Whoa.
I was in Louisiana.
Yeah.
So I did the beauty pageant circuit, then moved out to Los Angeles. And Bob Hope was the first person to ever hire me. So he basically started my career on a Bob Hope special. And then that led to stand-up comedy. Many years, I did stand-up comedy when lots of gals who had a beauty queen look or a glamorous look or a sexier look no one was really doing stand-up comedy. I kind of started after, but, you know, with the Roseanne Barrs and Paula Poundstones, and I started doing stand-up in 1984.
Wow, very cool. So you had a lot of different interests early on. By the way, I'm here with Danny, so I just want you to know it's not just
Hi,
me.
Danny.
Hi.
You're
my fellow blonde. There's two blondes on this call now.
Awesome.
I was reading your bio, and everybody's calling you the blonde bombshell and taking over being the blonde. I love it. I'm feeling empowered just reading about you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Got to work that blonde thing.
Got to work it to your advantage, especially out here. I'm sure you, as I saw that you did.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. My book has lots of sexual harassment stories in it, too, and that was even before all this craziness started.
Oh, my God. I'm sure you had
imagine.
To go through that, huh? Now, was it, do you feel it was worse back then, or is it, it was probably just the same, but reported, right?
I think that human nature is always human nature, and mm-hmm. I think that when males and even some females are in a place of power,
right.
And there's people of lesser power, and they can use that against them. They're going to use it. It's just, it's an unfortunate part of human nature.
Right.
Was it worse then? I think it was probably the same. But, you know, it depends on who you are. You know, I was an up-and-coming, I mean, a young gal from Louisiana, you know, from a very strong background, family background that was, you know, that really watched everything that I did, and they were very protective of me, which was good. So I had that going, and I had their help financially in terms of paying for my rent and apartment. So, you know, I wasn't a starving actress, but so that was good. Yeah, no doubt the casting couch was alive and well. And it's really interesting. When I wrote my book, I talked about it, not ever realizing that what would come up, you know,
yeah,
down the line. But
finally
I talked about it because
up.
No one else was talking about it.
Yeah, that's true. And you got to, you know, and that's why I understand this feeling of frustration and anger from women, many of whom have been harassed or molested or, you know, I mean, even before this came out, it's just like it seems like almost every other woman you talk to has been hurt
well,
by
that's
somebody.
What I'm saying.
You know?
It's not just in Hollywood. It's pretty much in,
right.
in all workplaces.
Right.
I have, you know, being that, I mean, I really had some bad incidences, but I was good. I was safe. I mean, thank goodness I got out of all those situations, and that was not my MO and who I was to, you know, to gain success. But I also think that it is being taken a little too far because it's sad if you can't meet someone in the workplace or you can't compliment someone in the workplace.
Right.
Or even if you're on a date and someone makes a pass at you, you know, you have to be able to get out of those things. I don't think that's sexual harassment if you're on a consensual date. To me, harassment or abuse is when, you know, like you go in for an interview or someone says, you're not, I'm going to blackball you, or you're not going to get this job, or you have to do this or this, or you're done. You know, that to me,
yes,
but I think that line is getting a little blurry now.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. You know, if you, now it's almost like if someone compliments your shirt, like,
yeah,
like guys
I
in
know.
The workplace need to be worried about even complimenting somebody. Else.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
and,
like
and
that.
That's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. I mean, maybe we have to go that far to, so that it is okay. Maybe we have to go all the way the other direction, but, I would hate to see, because so many great marriages come out of people meeting on the job, you know,
Agreed.
Or
exactly.
meeting in the workplace or through work. And
right.
and I love, and I talk about in my book, that I'm a flirt. But being
right.
a flirt doesn't mean that you're seducing someone.
Right. There's
but
no coercion,
to,
you know.
Yep.
It's
and
the difference between being friendly and flirty.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if
sure
people
is. I mean,
don't
you can be flirty and compliment someone, or, you know, you have to let someone know, hey, you have an attraction for them, but you're not saying, hey, come on, you know, attack me. You know, it's like, I think we just have to, you know, get that out there. And I mean, I'm glad that it has been brought out, and it's sad
yeah.
that at the level, but this has definitely been going on at all levels. I
really?
Mean, if a guy had a card, they'd make up cards that would say producer, they'd hit on you when I hit LA.
Good.
So, I mean, I always knew that. But listen, even in major situations, like on lots of Paramount and Universal, in real legitimate meetings, I had situations that were a little scary. But, you know, I was always smart, either brought someone with me or knew how to, I always knew where the door was. I always had an escape route. And when I was really, you know, when I hit Los Angeles was the height of the Jiggle Wiggle, you know, Charlie's Angels and
right.
Wonder Woman. So it was women in victimized roles, or even if they were strong like Wonder Woman, it was done with a lot of cleavage. So
it
was not the day of empowering woman as it is now.
Right.
They were the secondary roles.
Did you use those experiences in coming up with your lingerie line that we are reading about, this Abra?
The Abra, the number one selling bra in the world.
Really?
35 million bras sold.
Wow.
No, I wouldn't say I used my experiences. I used my experiences as a woman that my body was changing.
Right. Exactly. But were you typecast into certain roles?
So usually entrepreneurs and people invent things out of necessity, usually for themselves. So I wanted to do this bra that was universal, that was stretchy, and that would work on most body types. And when it started taking off, my husband said, wow, we should do an infomercial on this bra, which we did. And then it just ended up being this phenomenon worldwide. So, and then, you know, but my husband and I have been in business since 2003. So long time at it and continuing to move on and develop new products for my line. So we're not just bras. We do thousands of other items, including loungewear and apparel and sweatpants and tops and sexy lingerie and sleepwear, you name it, shapewear.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So you found ways to keep yourself busy even after the Hollywood days, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I reunited with my high school sweetheart. That was an accident. So
an accident? Wow.
Love a good love story.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I was dating all these guys in L.A., and then at some point after the show, I was on Up All Night for 8 years, and right after the show ended, or sometime, you know, in a year or so, my now husband reached out to me through classmates.com. And I never thought I would end up with the first boy that ever kissed me. But anyway, we met back up in New Orleans and over Christmas, and then 15 days later we were married. So it was just completely unexpected, and then we started this business together.
Yeah. And you're still married.
He was already a businessman and an entrepreneur, so his business knowledge and you know, my love of being in front of the camera made it work.
Yeah.
So my book talks about, it's a love story. It talks about being an entrepreneur. It talks about my early days in Hollywood. It talks about sexual harassment. And all of that, it talks about the tips and the tricks and the things I learned to move ahead and become a businesswoman, that there is life after Hollywood. There's life after any career if you choose to start another career.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you're showing this. You're a great example for people, great inspiration. So your product is called A Bra, right?
Well, my number one selling bra that really put a big light on my business is called the A Bra. But the name of the brand and the line is Rhonda Shear, so it is under my name. We are shown on HSN, which is Home Shopping Network. Uh-huh. Which reaches 90 million households, and online we have RhondaShear.com, and then I'm in many other online companies like HerRoom.com, and if you just search my name, you're going to see a lot, you know, Amazon.com.
Right.
So we are, and lots of boutiques as well, but our biggest customer is definitely online and direct response and television shopping.
Right. So if people want to look at your products, what website should they go to?
I just go to RhondaShear.com.
Okay.
R-H-O-N-D-A, Shear, S-H-E-A-R, or HSN.com. So a lot of ladies out there know Home Shopping Network is HSN.com or RhondaShear.com.
Right.
And through RhondaShear.com, you'll see the book. I mean, I'm selling the book on my website as well as Amazon, and people can get a signed personalized copy of the book as well, and it's a really fun, interesting, funny, definitely a good read and inspirational.
Does it have advice in it for women that may be wanting to change careers since you've done so many different things?
Yes, exactly. It talks about finding love after 40 and marriage after 40, starting a new career at midlife, and it discusses all of those things, starting a new product line, how do you get a product to market. So it's a really good book for anyone that's just starting a career or, you know, changing lives and finding love later on, because people are so afraid to search for love or find love, or, you know, they're afraid to take chances. And I was lucky to have a husband that didn't mind taking the chances with me and go for the crazy ride with me.
That's great. I got to check out this business book. I'm excited. Yeah,
the book is Up All Night, Rhonda Shear. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned you're an accidental feminist. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. An accidental feminist. Well, because I was in the years of Hollywood when you know, to be either a feminist, you had to look, you know, really tough and hard and act, be a man, basically, or act like a man. And then I was playing against, you know, I was playing the type. I couldn't really play against type. I had a sexier image. I wore the big hair of the 90s and the 80s. And so I wanted to make it on my terms of how I looked. So I looked a certain way. So it didn't read or look to people that I was a feminist.
Right.
But on the other hand, I was working, obviously, for equality in what I was getting paid. I was working, you know, doing it on my terms. No, there was no hanky-panky to get where I got.
Right.
When I worked comedy clubs, and headlined Vegas as a comedian, I was paid the same as any guy. So So basically, I was doing, just when I say I was an accidental feminist, I knew what I was doing. I just did it with a wink and a smile, and did it my way, and never, you know, I just didn't do it in a hard way.
Right.
Didn't ruffle feathers.
I don't feel like you
can
do that. I don't feel like you have to look a certain way to get your point across.
Right.
That you're a strong woman.
No, absolutely. And would you say that feminism today is different from the way it was when you were here and dealing with this?
No, I just, the only thing that when I say I'm a feminist, the only thing that I have a problem with feminists today, not all, but
right.
is the feeling of there's a lot of anger in
right,
it.
Right.
And I just don't think that you win by being angry. I think that, you know, that you can do things calmly and still get ahead. I think, you know, you don't, I think that all of this is coming to play, like at one time was going on in Hollywood, the sexual harassment, equal equality for women, the women's marches. And I mean, I know it's great our voice is heard, but sometimes it just comes off angry. And I would just, for me, I just like to move slowly and ahead in my own way.
No,
and
I
have many friends the same way that really get their point across. They're strong women. So many women in my line of work, you know, that are designers, they're all really strong, but they're strong and feminine at the same time. And they deal with men. They've always dealt with men. I have female producer and director friends that have always dealt with men, but they just don't feel like they have to do certain things or look a certain way or act a certain way to get it across.
Yeah, true.
I like that.
Rhonda Shear, the book is up all night, and you can find out more about everything that she's done. A superwoman, definitely close to the definition, I think. And
So tell
but people.
I will be in town. I will be signing autographs at the Hollywood Show on. You can go to thehollywoodshow.com on the 10th of February, and there's going to be a lot of celebrities there, so you can have some of your favorite celebrities sign pictures. And at the Barnes and Noble at the Grove on February the 11th, from noon to 2.
Oh,
and I'll be speaking and answering questions and signing books, and people can bring any other pictures, and I'll be happy to sign those as well. I'm really excited about coming back, or I should say coming home. Hollywood was definitely home to me for many years.
There you go. Well, we'll try and make it over there, at least
Thank
to the Grove,
you.
To see you and meet you in person. That would be awesome, you know.
I would love that. And I thank you so much for talking to me.
Of course. Well, are you kidding? We would talk to you any day. Rhonda Shear, thank you
Rhonda.
So much. All the best to
thank you.
Okay,
you too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye.
Bye. So, definitely done a lot in her life, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. I like her stance on feminism because, you know, not to get too far into it, but just being a female in sports, I worked alongside men for, you know, my entire career, which is short so far because I am young, but spent a lot of time around a lot of men. And I understand what she's saying, that there is a sort of a calm way that you can go about making your point across without being so harsh
right.
And
I mean,
appreciated
I tell
her
you.
Opinion.
Yeah. You know, but I got to tell you that men today, including myself, feel we're under attack.
I can understand that.
And that's not a good way to negotiate or to talk to anybody.
I agree.
So, so that's why. And then you watch some pictures from this Women's March. And that were just awful of signs that people gave the little kids, you know, with dirty words on them and everything. It just, like she said, it's such anger, you know. And maybe it is warranted, but it's not going to solve the problem.
In certain areas, it's definitely warranted.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's certainly done a lot, hasn't she?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's check out some news. I wanted to talk about this Larry Nassar sentencing. This is the doctor for the Olympics, for the gymnastics, that was accused of by more than 150 women and girls. That's how many. So if you think this guy's like made a mistake or something, you know, no.
It's just heartbreaking.
This was a predator, you know?
Absolutely. And it's heartbreaking that he had such access to so many young girls. And these girls are finally getting the courage to stand up to him not only because of this movement that's going on, but also because they've gained such a following that now they know that they can stand on their own two feet without, you know, worrying about what the repercussions may be because they have such a following now.
Right.
And so it is, it's just heartbreaking hearing these stories, and it's heartbreaking hearing the testimonies of everybody. And
I
don't like that he had such access to all these young girls.
That's the thing. And he wasn't even the coach. He was the doctor. You know, the one that you have to trust the most.
And they're most so now, intimate with.
So, usually. Yeah. So what is that going to do now to male doctors, to men in general, you know? And it's just not.
It's one of those scenarios where, once again, and just like we were talking about, you can't blame everybody. It's not saying that all doctors are bad and that you should be weary of all doctors, because there are some fantastic doctors out there. It's unfortunate that there's somebody out there that kind of could change the MO or change the stereotype of something like that. But then again, it's kind of like when you go into a new relationship, you can't take all the problems of your old relationship into your new relationship.
Right.
But at the same time, now everybody's going to have that little chip on their shoulder. Is something going on? And it's too bad that you have to look at everything now with some sort of skepticism.
Right.
And that's tough.
I know. And but it's so heinous to think of what he did. You know, I mean, think of your daughter finding out that your daughter was, you know, subjected to this or something. I mean, this like kills the soul of a child. That's what these guys don't understand. You know, to them it's just like, oh, let me play around with them, like the thinking of a child, because an adult would not think in that way. You know?
Can't imagine how scared they were. You know, I really lucked out to not have to go through anything like that, but being so young, and like you said, it's going to affect them. You know, for years and years and years.
It destroys the soul. Yeah. You know what I mean? When you make someone feel dirty and guilty about themselves and whatever. So if there's any good news here is that he was sentenced to life in prison. And it's no wonder, because there's so many charges against him. So up to 175 years in prison, that means he's never getting out. And the judge told him, I just signed your death warrant. So there you go. I don't know how old he is, but he's not that old. So he's got a long time to sit there and think about this, you know?
Which is a good thing. He's got a lot of thinking to do, a lot.
I mean,
reflection.
This is like serial spiritual murder, you know? That's what it is. I mean, you kill the spirit.
Hopefully all of his victims do feel some sort of relief, in the sense that obviously that feeling will never go away, that traumatic experience will never go away, but hopefully they can be at some peace knowing that he's behind bars.
Right.
They are safe. They will continue to be safe, and they can hopefully rebuild whatever sort of things inside of them that he broke down. They can rebuild that now.
Yeah. I mean, just think of the audacity, you know. I mean, 150 times to do
this?
That's
so many.
You know? I mean, one is too many, right?
Mm-hmm. And the thing is it's with a major, major brand, and all these girls go and play this sport and think that they've reached the highest level with USA Gymnastics, and they think that they are on some sort of pedestal, so you almost believe that it's okay what's going on. This must be okay because I reached the highest level. Is this what everybody's going through?
Right.
Is this normal? I mean, you're so young, you have no idea. It just breaks my heart that he took advantage of that many young girls.
Right. So he got what he had coming to him. So a couple of other things I wanted to bring up is, this is another sad story. I don't know why the hell I'm bringing it up, but I mean, it is the news, you know.
And news tends to be a little sad.
Right. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. Mm-hmm. We all know that. But the police accused two students, age 12, of cyberbullying a girl into suicide. The girl was 12 years old as well. And this is like so heartbreaking, you know, because you start to think, I mean, we have a problem with suicide anyway in this country, you know, any age. I mean, you have veterans, you know, former troops that kill themselves at alarming rates. You have a lot of young people, obviously. And it's like I said, it's heartbreaking because it's such young lives, you know. I mean, imagine your daughter being driven to suicide at 12. I mean, that like finishes your life forever. You'll never be the same.
It's very complete, and it's too bad because I've had that happen in my family, and it's we looked at it as a disease. You know, it was almost like a cancer, an incurable disease, is that depression. But you know, knowing that people could reach out and could. There's some circumstances, I believe, especially if they're adults, there's where, you know, people do try and they've given them every sort of outlet. And sometimes it's just a disease and depression kind of overtakes them. But especially someone that is so young like this, she doesn't know any better. And, you know, I can't even imagine going back to being a parent in these times with these cell phones and these unrealistic pictures of what everyone's supposed to look like and what life's supposed to look like due to social media. And then this certain expectation that young girls are probably supposed to be quote unquote hitting. And then they have so much pressure on them. It's got to be hard to be a parent right now in these days.
Right. No, for sure. And especially, and to be a kid in this age of technology, because, you know, apparently the girls, this is what her actions or their actions consisted of: starting rumors of the victim having sexually transmitted diseases, vulgar name calling, and threats to expose personal and sensitive details of the victim's life.
At 12,
you know. So the thing is, you know, and everybody's got secrets. If she's afraid her secrets are going to come out, yeah, she'll commit suicide. You know, I mean, she'll be driven to that. And you don't know what's underneath it anyway. Maybe even without that pressure, she was prone to depression or whatever. We don't know. But they obviously pushed her over the edge. And you know what? You know, try them as adults. You know, this is bullshit, man.
Yeah,
you cause somebody's death, and they should know better. But that's what we do, is we figure in this society, younger people, not
make
responsible.
Excuses for them.
Right.
But at the same time, all of these young people nowadays are acting older than they are.
Right.
You know, they're exposed to so much more adult conversations, adult pictures and images and things like that, that they almost are mini adults now. There's people, you know, it's not like when I was 12 years old. I can't even imagine talking about some of, and that wasn't even that long ago, which shows how much, you know, it has grown and expanded and how much they're exposed to. You almost have to look at them like they do know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Even if they really don't, because they are so young.
Right. And, you know, and it's easy to cyberbully everybody with text and social media and all that, you know, and they do Snapchat and all that stuff. So it's all pretty sad and it's scary. And that's the stuff they show you on Black Mirror on Netflix. Have you seen any of those?
I've seen a few. I'm actually just starting to get hooked onto it.
Really? Well, be careful, because I got to tell you, after 3-4 episodes, I decided it's too depressing for me. It's too real.
Oh, yes. I actually skipped around and watched like a couple later in the seasons. And I was impressed more so about how it's so futuristic, but yet doesn't seem that far away from
right
now.
It's very near future. Yeah. And it shows you how technology is making us crazy.
Yeah, and it's actually disgustingly funny how real it almost feels that
it
this
really
could
does.
Happen. It's no longer futuristic or out of this world or too far away to think that these things could actually happen. Black Mirror is my
book. You know, I mean, you guys definitely have to check it out, at least a couple different episodes. But I don't know, with me, and I never felt like this about any show, but I felt I don't need to watch this anymore. It's just too...
It's unsettling.
Yeah, it really is in many ways. So, I mean, it shows you the vulnerability we have online with our phones, you know, and... just imagine if your privacy is invaded in so many different ways.
Yeah, that's essentially what Black Mirror, if you guys haven't seen it, is all about. It's essentially taking different ideas of what could happen coming up here in the near future with all of this technology and how much they know, and puts people in different scenarios that really start to get scary. It's not a scary show, but it is a little bit uneasy.
It's disturbing, you're right. It's unsettling, you know. There's too many things. And it started as a British series, but now it's an American series. So
I will say it's making a lot of people talk, though, because, you know, I'll go out to a bar or I'll go out to eat with my friends and everybody's talking about Black Mirror.
Really?
So it's sparking conversation.
Yeah.
So maybe it's sparking conversation enough to make people scared of what could happen. And maybe they just figure out ways to not make it get to that extent.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. So yeah, I mean there was some things there. I was blown away, mm-hmm. blown away. One last shitty story, and then we'll go to a good story, okay?
We got
to
end on something happy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's too sunny and beautiful in Southern California, like we were talking about, to end on something sad.
Exactly. But since you guys get so much politics out there, we're not going to do that, and we're looking at other bad, depressing news.
Thank you.
There you go. So Toys R Us apparently is planning to close more than 180 stores. That's another casualty.
Yes.
You know, although they've announced a bankruptcy a few months ago, they're closing about 182 stores around the country. They have about a total of 1,600 stores around the world. So this is not a lot, but it's still, after 7 decades of business, that's what they're facing right now.
I know. I feel like it has to do with all this technology. Everybody's not playing with toys quite as much, which is tough because when you say Toys R Us, it brings me back to Christmas time, birthdays. I remember my uncle, who was a lawyer, very well off. He used to take me into Toys R Us, and he would say, "Okay, Danielle, you can get anything you want in this store. Go." And he used to always go back to my mom and laugh because I would come back with something very small and very, I wasn't very smart back then. I didn't take advantage of it. And he used to stand there and explain to me, you know, you can get anything you want. And I would come back with something small because it made me happy. But yeah. I used to just look around that store with such amaze and awe. And now to know that some of them are closing and that kids maybe don't even go there anymore.
Right.
Is surprising.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, I don't know if kids don't go there anymore because I went there the other day. But you're right. No, it's not as busy as it
right.
used to be. But, I mean, kids still like it, but the parents end up buying it online.
Online.
You know? And that's the easiest thing to do is to go to the store, do some shopping, look at what you want. Buy it online.
I mean, aren't we all guilty of it? It's
we
so
are.
Much easier
we
to just...
We created Amazon, which is the monster of this culture.
Exactly, you know? But I love Amazon.
I know,
in the same
me
breath,
too.
I can't even hate on it. You know, I was just thinking about yesterday putting my grocery list on Amazon and start doing that because I've heard that people have been doing their grocery shopping on Amazon.
Yeah.
No one likes to go to the grocery store, find parking. Nobody likes to do that at the mall either. Why not just sit down at the ease of your own couch and order? But that's exactly why Toys R Us is closing.
Yeah, so we become lazy and Amazon's taking over everybody. You know, I mean, Macy's and all these other stores are closing, many stores. So it's sad commentary about us, but the point is Amazon solves all our problems. It's cheaper, it's fast. It's good. You can return anything, everything, whatever you want, you know. So how can you argue with that? I mean, look.
Exactly. 2 days, 2-day delivery, and then I don't have to pay if I don't like it to return it.
Exactly, you know.
That's
yeah,
perfect.
How can you argue with that?
Right.
You don't even have to leave the house.
You spend more money on gas money to go return something to drive it back to the store
exactly.
than you would sitting on your couch to return it.
Right. But at the same time, you go to the store. I mean, you don't want these stores to close because, you know, I mean, we're running out of places to go and shop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it is a serious problem. I mean, and unsolvable, apparently, for many companies who are having to close because they can't figure out how to compete.
And that's people losing jobs.
Yeah.
You know, and that's. At the end of the day, that's a big thing as well. There's a bunch of people that need work in those stores, and they're just going away.
Yeah, yeah. So that's pretty sad. But I got to tell you, I mean, what am I doing? Let me just close this. I clicked on the video by mistake. But, I go to the bookstore and stuff, right? I find a book I like, $30. I'm like, shit, I can get this on Amazon for $18. How can I possibly spend the $30? But sometimes I will because I want to help keep those stores open.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to spend some money there, right?
My family, who has a bookstore, really appreciated that statement just
really?
Now.
Yeah, no, I mean, if we want to keep those stores,
they're thanking you right now.
Right. No, I mean, I try to do my part in the community, but because I want, they close so many of them.
They really have.
You know, so... I want to have at least one or two, so I go there. But I still I can't. Even though I can fork out the $30, when you can get it for less, and if you can wait a couple days, Why would you not get it at Amazon?
Exactly. You know? Oh, Amazon is just killing me. You have a caveat for everything now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. So that's that. And then you have other companies disrupting too, like Uber and all them, mm-hmm. you know. And so suddenly the cab drivers are really suffering and stuff. Mm-hmm. And many places around the world, they won't even allow them to operate.
I use Uber all the time. Yeah. Man, I really am a millennial. My goodness. If anything has come from this conversation, we now know that I am way too much of a millennial.
Well, but you know what the good news is for millennials? I was reading yesterday in the paper is that 16% of millennials have $100,000 socked away somewhere.
Interesting.
Right? 16%, that's a lot of people.
How many more years do I have until I
yeah, get out how of that long? Section? A millennial is what? Through, I don't know what age, but 90s, 2000s, you know, that's pretty much when you were born. At any rate, folks, we're totally out of time. Denny, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It was
fun. You're a natural. And but then of course you knew that, right?
I do like to talk.
You're in front of people a lot and stuff, so that's cool. So thanks again for joining me, for contributing, and thank you everybody for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning.